Jake from State Farm here, hanging out with Mel's Mow & Grow. Mel chose State Farm for small business insurance because his local agent is a small business owner, too. So she knew how to help him personalize his policies. And now, he's rolling in the green. Like a good neighbor. Guys, I'm trying to do the line.
Oh, sorry, Jake.
It's all good. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast that was so excited about the first period against the Colorado Avalanche. Just kind of turned off the game and went on about my holiday. So I guess first question, Mark, they're doing pretty great, I assume, right?
Yeah, that was some drunk we went on, huh? Thank God 2 o'clock came around and they cut us off.
I mean, geez, it's been a while because of holidays and some non-hockey stuff, but I feel like if there ever was a moment for this particular podcast to make its return, it's on the heels of the weird week that the Dallas Stars have just had. Of course, joined by Mark. Hello, Mark. Nice to speak with you this evening.
I'm feeling great. Let's go over this homestand.
Let's let it rip. So I guess the we'll start with just a couple of high number, you know, overall, like, so you know, kind of a prove it stretch against some pretty good teams. 1-1-1, and then Calgary happened. All of a sudden, you know, Dallas wakes up post Thanksgiving and they're third in the division, sixth in the conference, and a lot of the play may not be, you know, it may not be Mozart on the ice, but they're getting results. You can't argue with that. All of a sudden, that narrative is maybe looking a little more threadbare than it was at the start of the season. And Mark, I'm going to hand it to you. Where would you like to start unpacking what has happened over the last, I guess, week and a half?
Well, I'm always one to start with the positive. And I think with the positive, you have to say that the Stars offense is living up to top billing here. You have four lines that are playing fairly well. I think you could argue that the fourth line is fine. And then the top three lines are, they're so balanced, nobody can score over 10 goals or over 9 goals.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the balance. It's funny, we were talking about this in the pre, so I'm not going to do the thing where I ask you a hypothetical question because we've already gone over this, but right now as we record, Dallas has 66 goals for, which puts them at 11, puts them 11th in the league right now. So almost a top 10 offense, and Dallas's leading goal scorer, for those of you at home, I'm going to give a slight pause. You can try and answer yourself. Dallas's leading goal scorer has 19 points. It's Joe Pavelski, tied for 42nd in the league with the illustrious likes of Evan Bouchard, Trevor Moore, Zach Hyman, and our old friend, if he were still on the team, here's a good one. Which former Dallas Star would be tied with Joe Pavelski for the team lead in points were he still with the Dallas Stars?
Riley Tubb, no, Val Nichushkin.
Yeah, Val Nichushkin would be leading the Dallas Stars in goals and assists if he was still alive.
Rumor has it that he lifted the puck off the ice for several of those as well.
You know, it's a thing. We always said if he was going to learn a trick, that'd be the one to learn. But it's a classic, like, it for the team. I think it's very good news, right? They're a top, you know, flirting with the top 10. They're a top 15 offense. 11th is fantastic. And if you look at, you know, most of the, there are a couple teams ahead of them. Colorado has 76 goals, but a couple of the teams ahead of them are, you know, 67 goals, 69 goals. So they're right in the mix for, you know, the kind of elite class of offenses in the league. They've even had, you know, thanks to the second unit, right, the power play is going again. So offensively, they're getting it done. And they're getting it done in a way that, you know, we've talked about Pete DeBoer hockey, right? They're getting it done in a way that Pete DeBoer would certainly approve of. And yes, you can dream about how it gets even better when and if, you know, Jason Robertson goes on a characteristic heater or somebody starts to separate from the pack. But even if that doesn't happen, how do you stop a top, you know, top 12 offense when the scoring is coming from, you know, seemingly literally everybody?
Right. And the thing is, just when you think you have a hotline, somebody else gets hot. And just as at the point that you're thinking that you need to roll it or change things up a little bit, you know, for instance, I was feeling a little down on Wyatt Johnston, Jamie Benn, and Evgeny Dodonov, and all of a sudden they throw a bunch of pucks into the net.
Oh, so Wyatt Johnston.
It's just rolling all the way down.
He is just the business. Oh, he's so good.
Yeah, and I mean, the only thing I could say is there's room for improvement there. I am fully on board the Logan Stankoven up to the NHL bandwagon, and the only thing I don't like about it is we're probably going to have to send Delandry or Steele down to the AHL to make it happen. But that needs to happen.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's out of our league a little bit, but Logan Stankoven is up to 21 points in 16 games. He's third in the AHL in scoring, and he's tied with another prospect by the name of Maverick Bork. So there's, you know, we've talked about the guys, of course, on the roster, but oh man, there's some options there. If and when offense does become an issue, there are some guys that you could plug in to great effect. Here's another question for you, Mark. We're down to, and I'm going to eliminate Joel Hanley because he's played four games and he's just handling it up. We're down to a single Dallas Star that does not have a point this season. I guess not counting the goalies. We're down to a single Dallas Star. Can you tell me who that is?
Jake Oettinger.
Jake. Oh, eliminating the goalies.
Oh, damn it. Sorry, KT. Let's see. It's a defender and it's going to be Yanni Hakanpää.
It is Yanni Hakanpää. Well done. Well done. Yeah, and actually, I apologize. I was looking at the wrong season. I was about to say Oettinger has an assist. He's got four for his career, but he so far has none this season. He's chasing his career high in points. Oettinger had 2 points in 21-22. So maybe they got to get him going a little bit here.
Well, and here, yeah, you know, we're talking about all these riches that the Stars have on offense, and for really the first time in quite some time, I don't think the offense is what we need to be concerned about. What we need to be concerned about is the defense. And what do you do to fix it, Wes?
Yeah, well, and first, I think this is a really good example of, in my opinion, I think that one of the issues, and I think it was particularly evident against Calgary, is that I think Jake Oettinger is going through a little bit of a lackluster stretch, right? And not... I don't know if I would go. I don't know if I would go so far as to say bad, right? Because his standard is so very high. But I think what we're seeing is he has largely been playoff Oettinger for this season, and on the strength of being playoff Oettinger, he's, you know, this we saw what happened, right? Dallas jumped out to a divisional lead, was a, you know, really strong team and accumulating points as all get out, and all of a sudden he's had some wobbles, and we're seeing some weird numbers, like the Colorado game, like the Calgary game. And we're seeing some breakdowns in this system. And I don't know is the answer. I think I'm tempted at this stage, still early enough in the season, still accumulating points. I mean, we're talking about, oh no, they're third in the division. Well, they're tied with Winnipeg in second, so there's that. And then they're 2 points behind Colorado with a game in hand. So really, we're just trying to hype things up a little bit when we say they're third in the conference. If they win their game in hand, they're tied for first with two other teams, and that's not terrible. They are 5-4-1 in the last 10, but I honestly think at this stage, you know, Harley's come back from injury looking pretty good. Lundqvist has been scoring a little bit. Unless you're willing, you know, unless you're Jim Nill and you're willing to pull the trigger on a move, and not a peripheral move. I think, you know, Castillo's dropping the I'm blanking on his name. Tanev. Yeah, he's dropping. I think unless you're willing to do a big move, and you know, unless you're willing to do a big move, I think probably the solution right now is maybe you give Ottinger another week or two and see if he fixes it. And by give him a week or two, either play him a lot and see if he can play his way out of it, or give Wedgwood, who's been fine, a couple of extra starts and Ottinger some extra practice. But I think option one is let's see if the kid can fix this. What do you think?
Well, I have a follow-up question. Is this Ottinger or is this the defense? And I say that specifically because some of the big things that Ottinger did early on in the season was to handle odd man rushes. And we were giving up oodles of those.
Yeah.
And that's not really gone away. And maybe the issue now is that Ottinger's not making these incredible saves that are, you know, high danger chance save percentage in the, you know, 930, 940 range. And that's not something that's maintainable. And so now is Ottinger just not quite making all the saves that the defense is forcing him to make?
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And I will say I stick with my answer, and here's why. Again, to fix the defense, this isn't a situation where there's, you know, another player waiting in the wings, or this isn't a situation where I think there's a tweak you could make that would correct this problem with the defense. If you're going to fix the Dallas Stars defense, you're making a trade. And if you're making that trade, it's for a guy that can play meaningful minutes in a meaningful role. So you're making a trade that involves assets. And so I think that before you do that, right, this team, so much of this team is humming right now. I think before you do that, you need to see, like, if Ottinger can get back to making some of those saves. He doesn't have to get all the way back to, you know, 930, 940, but if he starts making some of those saves, then, you know, you start, here's a thing that stood out to me, right? If you look at the expected goals over the last 10 games, right, Dallas has lost, and expected goals is, it's not perfect as far as stats go, but it is a pretty good indicator of quality of play, right? If you look at the chances and you should probably score more than the other team on a given night, then you will probably win more of those games than you lose, right? So if you look at the last 10 games, Dallas has lost the XG battle exactly twice, right? Colorado, they only had 40%, and then Calgary, they had 47%. Right. So other than that, and you could probably throw Boston in. They lost to Boston and it was 50.8, right? So round up and they're ahead, but effectively pushed Boston, lost it to the Avs and the Flames. But the rest of that list, right? Blue Jackets, you'd expect. They played the Jets off the ice 66%, right? Beat the Coyotes, who are frisky. They put clown shoes on the New York Rangers, who have had a phenomenal season, right? And so I think it's more that it's not me saying that I think Ottinger is more of a problem or that we should ignore what's going on with the defense. It's more me saying that this team has managed to be successful despite that to this point. And given the scope of what you'd have to do to fix the defense, I think you try and wait a little bit longer to make that move. And then just throwing one more reason on the pile, also looking at the way salary cap space works, right? And if you're making a move for a big guy, he probably has a big number. And the closer you get to the trade deadline, the less he costs, right? Because cap hit prorates. So the closer you get to the salary cap, a guy that's, you know, the more expensive guys become more in your wheelhouse. And then as well, like the way the offense is playing, some of the guys that you might dangle in a trade might look more appealing if they spend another 2 or 3 weeks in this offense racking up points. So I think for me right now, my solution is let's see if Ottinger can start, you know, being playoff Ottinger a little bit more before anything more serious happens.
But I would back up, and here I'm going to throw the counterpoint out there. Right now, the defense is, I believe, bottom six in scoring. But the defense is also jumping into play quite a bit. And I think the defense jumping into play is one of the things that's making them vulnerable to odd man rushes going back the other way.
Yeah.
And we've also seen that the forwards can get three guys caught below the line as well. And that's certainly been problematic unless you have some guys just busting their hump coming back with speed. And that's been a problem. So is this an issue with the personnel or is this an issue with the systems where we're overcommitting to the offense that we're getting? And because of that, we're giving things up on the back end and maybe we're just hanging out or hanging Ottinger and whoever is stuck back with him out to dry. And maybe we shouldn't be quite so aggressive on the pinch. And maybe we need to be a little less aggressive with F4 as they're working their way through the offensive zone.
Yeah, I mean, but counter to your counter, right? If you scale back on that and you spend more time defending, does that put more pressure on what is potentially a suspect defensive group?
Yeah. Well, and that's why the coaches make the big bucks, right?
Yeah. Because so I think here, you know, the risk you run is we've seen in the past that this is a team that can have, once they get gummed up in their defensive zone, this is a team that has had some trouble breaking cycles, retaining possession, and getting the puck clear, right? They have struggled in that area. And I guess the thinking is the chances, would you rather they, and I don't know how the math or the math of this works out. You know, I'd have to do a lot more analysis than I have time for, frankly, but it comes down to, do they concede more quality chances on the counter rush, or would they concede more quality chances by sitting back and inviting more pressure?
Or do they do it selectively?
Yeah.
Because I warned you I was going to come out with this, but at a certain point, you have to wonder whether a Dallas Stars team that knew how to drop into a little bit more of a turtle in the third period would survive what happened against Colorado and what happened against Calgary better. And yeah, you can say, yeah, we're spending too much time in our zone. But on the other hand, by not making adjustments and by leaving the team open to odd man rushes or you know, catastrophic plays coming back into the defensive zone, isn't Dallas setting themselves up to turn a lead into at least a tie, if not worse?
I mean, I think that's the risk. The flip side, though, is you got to bury teams in this league, right? And we how many times did we see in, you know, under previous administrations, right? How many times did we see Dallas go into the turtle and never, you know, how often do we see them not extend a one goal lead and wind up, you know, losing a point or more?
Yep. So I think maybe the point here is that there are trade-offs, and the brand of hockey that the Dallas Stars are playing right now leaves the team more susceptible to catastrophic explosions against them, and they may get bigger wins out of it, and it's certainly more entertaining to watch that offensive hockey. But having the ability to drop into a shell and to shut down a lead in the third period is something that Dallas Stars fans have become used to. We've complained about it quite a bit, but sometimes it's functional.
Yeah, and I guess the question there, right, is the key of it is, in both the Colorado and the Calgary game, which I think are rightfully the focuses here, Dallas had a one-goal lead heading into the third period. And what I guess it comes down to is, you know, in the Colorado game, do you think that the way the team was playing at the end of the second period, do you think that team was going to be able to hold on to a one-goal lead no matter what they were doing?
Yeah, potentially not.
Yeah, and I think
so. At that point, throw caution to the wind and get your fifth or sixth goal.
Well, it's throw caution to the wind, or it's do what you're good at, right? And I think KT has the stat in our you know, kind of prep sheet. They've got, what is it, like seven guys pacing to have 20 plus goal seasons, which is pretty significant. So it's almost a I'm way oversimplifying this, Mark, so roll your eyes at me all you will, but it's almost to the point where would you rather, in those tight game situations, would you rather the coaching staff be putting their faith in, you know, Jason Robertson, Joe Pavelski, and Jake Ottinger, or would you rather them be putting their faith in Esa Lindell, Yanni Hakanpaa, and Ryan Suter?
Yeah, and there are probably some questions out there about how the defensive pairings have worked their way through, because we've gotten within the last couple of games back to Esa Lindell with Yanni Hakanpaa, which you presume to be your shutdown defending pair. And then the third pair has turned out to be Harley and Lundqvist. And if things are tight, they hardly ever see the ice.
Yeah.
Just because there's absolutely no faith that they're going to be able to shut anything down. And so what you end up with is either the Lindell-Hakanpaa pair, where you have really a lack of ability to move the puck with any kind of ease out of the defensive zone, or you end up with Miro Heiskanen and Ryan Suter, which can be okay if they're established in the defensive zone, but they're a little undersized. And I think Heiskanen ends up covering quite a bit. And maybe lately, I've noticed some frustration in his face. You certainly saw it with him breaking his stick on the neck following Ben doing the same thing against Calgary. But it's almost like he's not trusting what other people's reads are on defense.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether he's kind of caught in this situation where he's been burned a couple times now because he's overreacting, trying to cover for somebody, and then his guy ends up scoring. Or he's just frustrated because, you know, he covers his guy and then something goes in the net. And so what do you do if you're, you know, this is the year, you know, a month and a half ago, we were talking about Heiskanen is going to make this push for the North. And he put a lot of effort into this summer in getting himself offensively ready for what he thinks he needs to do in order to capture the North. But what we're seeing is a fairly fundamental breakdown on defense, where he's been on the ice and with Ryan Suter for the most part on the ice for a lot of goals against, and he's rocking a negative that he usually doesn't see.
And again, this is the challenge that we saw coming into the season. And I'm not saying that because we are brilliant, Mark, but I hardly think that we're alone in seeing this. This is where you get into, unless you think that Joel Hanley has a gear that we've just never seen, and as well as, you know, Bichelle has been playing in Cedar Park, like, this is a team that has no other in-house options they can pull besides messing with pairings, right? This is it. And here's a question. Do you think that some of what we're seeing right now is, you know, Harley, of course, took a belter, missed a couple of games. Is some of what we're seeing maybe the coaching staff working him back in, or do you feel like there is a confidence issue there right now?
I think there's a confidence issue there right now, especially on the Lundqvist side. Harley certainly is doing what they want on the offensive end. He's the one defender who's jumping in and getting results. I think from my point of view, I would do something that's somewhat drastic that we haven't seen much of. I would give Heiskanen his stay-at-home defender and put him with Lindell.
Mm.
And bite the bullet on either Suter and Lundqvist or Suter and Hakanpaa, and move that to, you know, third pair minutes. I think Lindell and Heiskanen putting in anywhere between 20 and 25 minutes each is probably the best that you're going to do, and it's going to open things up for Heiskanen to trust that he's always going to have somebody back. And with Heiskanen's speed, he can work his way back in, even if he's jumped into the play.
I like that. It's, you know, to your point, right? It's an acknowledgement that you could put, you know, the is what they are category probably extends to, you know, Lindell, Heiskanen, you know, Hakanpaa, Suter. Those guys are pretty defined. So I think you're right. That's it. It may be time to try and find ways to maximize Miro as a solution to the problem. You know, whereas this team has kind of traditionally used him to prop somebody else up. I think, yeah, it may be time to mess with ice time.
Well, yeah. And as you've seen, if you've been following any of this stuff, people have been posting defensive time charts and Suter is creeping up and up and up. And that's specifically because he's playing with Miro and almost exclusively with Miro. And there's such lack of trust down in the third pair. And that does not serve the team well, and it does not serve Miro well.
Yeah, just in his last five, right? So Lundqvist played 12-45 against Arizona, 13-13 against Colorado, 13-25 against New York, 12-52 against Vegas, 13-42 against Calgary. So those are, you know, it's not...
Yeah, that's you know, third pairing numbers.
And to your point, right, you just can't get away with that when you're not getting... You can get away with that. Like, I think of the old Ducks teams that had Niedermeyer and Pronger on them, right? And you can get away with that when you have a guy that can play half the game, and multiple guys, sorry, that can play half the game. But you just, Dallas doesn't have the depth to carry a defender that plays, you know, that plays third line forward minutes.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, I think we saw early on in the season that Suter looked pretty good playing third pair minutes, because, you know, face it, he's getting up there, and it's hard to keep the physicality going and to keep the legs moving. And if you, you know, Lindell, if nothing else, eats a lot of minutes. I think he's leading the league in the amount or the percentage of penalty kill time that's available that he's actually on the ice for, somewhere over 80%. So he's double shifting on a lot of penalty kills. And this is a guy who can eat minutes. If you put him in there for, you know, 18, 19, and he gets 4 or 5 or 6, you know, PK minutes, that's a full load. And that's going to match up well with what Haskinen's doing. And Haskinen, you know, Lindell rarely jumps into the play. And if he's going to jump into the play, he's pretty careful about making sure somebody else is back covering.
Yeah, I think at this point he's comfortable in what he is. He seems to, I'm not trying to minimize. I just mean one of the trademarks of good players, right, is they understand their strengths and their weaknesses and do more of the strong stuff and less of the weak stuff. And I think Lindell.
Well, and almost more importantly, the coaching staff is comfortable with his strengths and his weaknesses.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a good point. I think you're on to, you know, of course, then you have to factor in, well, what does an NHL coaching staff do when they all tend to favor the most NHL coaching staff move of all NHL coaching staff moves is to lean more heavily on a guy like Ryan Suter when things get dicey, right?
Right. But on the other hand, I don't know that you're going to make a distinction between playing Ryan Suter as a defensive defender or Esa Lindell playing as a defensive defender. The coaching staff should at this point probably trust Lindell a little better at that role. And the reason Suter's getting the numbers is because they're so dependent on Haskinen.
Yeah. And you kind of have to, you're right. I mean, it's to the point where when something important is happening, you have to play Miro, and that's fine. He's the team's best player. He's the team's best defenseman. Like he's there. That's not, I don't think that is an indication of any flaw or limited thinking on the coaching staff to say, if something important needs to happen offensively or defensively, Miro Haskinen needs to be on the ice. Like, yes, two thumbs up, cosign. Like maybe Jake Oettinger matters more to this team than Miro Haskinen, and that's about as far as I'm willing to go. Yeah, but you're right. It's then who's the next guy up, and then you get into that. It's all situational. It's Lindell, it's Suter, it's Hakan, it's Lundqvist, it's Harley. Like that's right now. That's a not, you know, they started strong and Oettinger was covering some blushes, and now we're seeing them regress to the mean. You know, it's kind of expected a little bit, and they're gonna have to figure this thing out. All the while, the thing is, pulled up Cap Friendly just on a lark. And, you know, this is a team that is effectively capped out. They've got about $500,000 in cap space. So, you know, part of why I talked about Jake Oettinger being the answer is, if you're going to fix this, you're going to have to go after a guy of significant financial value. And, you know, Dallas didn't, I think it was last year, they didn't have a first round pick, right? So you've coughed up, they don't have a second round pick. In 2025, they don't have a third or a fourth next. So this is a team that has given away some draft assets in the past. And so you're really looking at like, who do you send to make a, let's see, Tanev cap friendly. Like who do you send to make a deal happen?
Well, I mean, it has to be Fox and probably Akinpah if you're going to make it work.
Yeah. And the problem there, right. So just for the sake of argument, right. So, Chris Tanev has a $4.5 million cap hit. If a team picked him up today, they'd pay almost $3.4 million. That's kind of what remains. And so we talked about, you know, Dallas having, you know, $400,000 in cap space. So to make that deal work, you're going to have to find effectively, right, for what, $3 million worth of salary to send out. And unfortunately, like you said, Foxa would do that, right? 3.25 this year and next. Hakimpaa is 1.5, so he'd be part of the equation. The challenge is,
we're not talking else up.
Yeah, well, the challenge as well is like, who's going to pick up the phone to, hey, Calgary, you know, it helps, I guess. It hurts the Stars, helps the Flames. They've been better lately. But if you're calling around the league saying, hey, can I interest you in Radek Foxa and Yanni Hakimpaa? Right? Like how many of those calls are getting returned? So it's almost like, well, who do you have to actually trade to make somebody willing
Winnipeg,
to take,
right?
Say again?
Oh, Winnipeg, right?
Yeah. I mean, but Winnipeg,
they don't have Tanev.
They don't have a Tanev, and they're also, you know, tied for first in the division, or they're second place in the division right now. If you're just with Winnipeg's, you know, if you're Winnipeg's, you know, management, right? Can you take the optics of trading a good player to help a team that you're currently tied with in the standings?
Yeah, that was mostly a Bones joke, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's fair. But, so it just comes down to, like, if you're the Stars, you probably need to find, you know, it's probably two separate things to trade the player that you need, as well as you need to trade the value that you need to get the guy you want, and then additional value to cover the dollars that you need to send away.
Yeah. And to tell you the truth, I think a lot of this, you know, you take a look at the success that Jim Neal had at the trade deadline last year. I don't see anything happening until we get right up to the trade deadline. That's certainly the way the team's managing the cap. And it was so successful last year in what they were able to bring in what was even a tighter cap situation.
Yep.
So that is this is a conversation that we maybe have in a couple months, and in the meantime we have to fix what we have, because there's nothing that's going to come in that's going to lift out what you consider to be players who aren't performing and bringing in these dream players that fit the system that you want to play.
Yeah. And I would go one step further, Mark. Not only are you correct, and you're correct, but I think that's also the right decision, right?
Like, yeah, I agree.
Because this team is, you know, it is just as likely, like, you know, we've talked about a bunch of guys that are playing, you know, Jason Robertson, right? And I'm not going to bash Jason Robertson, because this isn't about him playing poorly. He's still just about a point a game, but he's not his, you know, MVP vote garnering self, right? So it's just as likely that a couple of those big names get hot, you know, Ottinger picks up an extra save or two, and, you know, like you're talking about, all of a sudden the team has bought itself another, you know, it's the calculus changes if they fall out of contention, or if things start to look like they might. And as bad as Calgary was, and as bad as Colorado was, you also have to, you know, keep in mind during that stretch, again, they beat the pants off the Rangers. They took Vegas to overtime the first period against Colorado. They beat Winnipeg. So this is a team that even though it has wobbled a little bit, they're still beating kids. And so I think, yeah, if they really start to slide, then it might amp up the urgency. But given how much season is left, given what the highs have looked like, given who is, you know, given some of the candidates for performance improvements, I think it just right now it makes sense to take a deep breath, say they probably won't pull a Colorado or a Calgary again, and see how the next, you know, not next month, month and a half goes.
Yeah, this is a problem that the first thing that you do is say, we've given you the tools to work with as a team. This is a problem in the room. Fix it.
Yeah.
And let the players decide that they don't want to lose. And if they don't want to lose, they maybe need to tighten things down a little bit without losing their offense when they get into tight games in the third period.
The players and frankly, I think the coaching staff as well, because a lot of the solutions we talked about are, there's a training wheels aspect right now. And well, Ryan Suter plays with Miro Heiskanen, because of course he does. And there's some coaching orthodoxy. And I think it's, yes, absolutely. One of the answers is, hey, players, fix this. You know, look to your left, look to your right. That's the that's the solution to the problem. I think the other one is, this is going to fall on DeBoer, right? You've got the toys you've got. And this is a group that...
Well, and we've seen we've seen DeBoer is not afraid to do that. That's what he did with the forward lines by breaking up the Hintz line. And now he's back to it. But that little shakeup was, I would argue, successful in that it got some of the other players going.
Yeah, I think so. And so I think you're right. It's time. It is time to do the same thing with the defense. I do think it's time to hand Miro. It's time to be Miro-centric. And I would love to see some pairings that centered around, let's maximize his value and trust that, you know, that accepting some limitations further down the pairing is okay, given you don't play them much anyways.
Yeah, I agree 100%. The first question that you ask yourself is, what move can I make to cause Miro to be his best self?
Yep.
And the answer to that question dictates how the rest falls out.
And so you think that that's Lindell?
At this point, I'm not sure it's Lindell, but I see reasons to think that it could be Lindell.
Yep. We've seen some usage of Harley and Miro. I'm still not sold on that line. I think that's a line you go to when you need one, not when you're trying to sit on one. But, you know, we need to see a little bit more growth of from Harley as a kind of full sheet player. And I think as well, he could probably handle the second pairing in that situation. So I don't know about that, but I think you're right. I think it's Lindell has experience, frankly, being the sidekick to a dynamic defensive partner. So I think that's a very logical next step.
Yeah, and it also breaks up Lindell Hockenpah, which is going to be that crutch line or crutch pair that is the death of this team. Because as much as you may want a shutdown pair, they shouldn't be the shutdown pair that's on the ice for the entire game. They maybe are the guys you bring in the last 5 or 6 minutes when you just need to move bodies because everybody's crashing.
Yeah. And I think as well, like I do think part of why they've been successful in the penalty kill is the breakout doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, Lindell is certainly mobile enough to get to his spots and on PK coverage, and Hockenpah, you can kind of give him an area. And I think that you can play that group in that situation because their job is what they do offensively anyways, right? Which is get the puck and then throw it as hard as you can up the ice, which is not so great when you're trying to run a 5-on-5 breakout, but hey, it's aces when you don't really have to worry about what happens next.
Yeah. Well, the thing, Lindell is so good with his stick on cross ice passes. He makes so many good reads, and he catches some abuse for the contract, but there are a lot of subtle things that Lindell does, especially on the penalty kill, that he doesn't get credit for.
And the more I've learned about the more I've learned about numbers and analytics and hockey, the less I'm frustrated by the, like, I think as well, if you take out the impact COVID had on the salary cap, I think that the it's never going to be in the, you know, Tyler Seguin's first contract, the contract we inherited from Boston, right? It's never going to be in that category of steals. Oh my gosh, great deals. But it is and was a perfectly defensible number for a perfectly defensible dude. Like there's nothing wrong with that contract. Not every contract has to be a holy crap, you got him to sign for what?
Yeah. And to tell you the truth, the Stars have enough of those already. I mean, look at Hintz's contract in retrospect.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, they keep hitting home runs on entry level guys. And you've got a guy like Wyatt Johnston contributing on his rookie deal. You've got Jake Oettinger on a bridge right now. You've got Jason Robertson on a bridge right now. If and when they pull the trigger, calling up Stankoven and or Bork, right? You've got guys that are going, you know, you always talk about you can afford to pay your stars as long as you make up the difference elsewhere. And right now that's the Dallas Stars.
So let's get close to wrapping up here. I think what's your take? You know, 10 games in, team's been slightly above average. They just ran the gauntlet of some pretty good teams on a homestand. How do you feel about the team here entering December?
I feel great about the team in the regular season. I think that we have seen the blueprint that I remain convinced that this team needs a big move closer to the deadline. I don't think that they need it in terms of saving the season, preserving playoff position. Like, they don't need it right now. But I think what we're seeing is exactly what we saw last year, which is a team that's going to be good during the regular season, get through a round or two in the playoffs, but they are eventually going to run into as the teams get injured, right? But this is a team that's going to enter the playoffs, and as the matchups get better and as the matchups kind of shift and focus on elite teams that have, you know, multiple, you know, the best of seven, all of a sudden you can game plan to a specific team. I remain unconcerned for Dallas's ability to get through the 82, because you don't really have the same ability to focus on flaws and exploit. And I remain just as worried as ever about an elite team in the playoffs in a best of seven series being able to dial it up and attack a flawed defense and have success against the Stars in the playoffs, right? It's what happened against Vegas. It's what happened, you know, there were times in the, they were on the ropes at times in the Minnesota series. There were some moments of struggle against Seattle. It eventually cost them against Vegas. They're a great team, but they have an exploitable flaw, which I think limits their upside when it comes to ability to win four playoff rounds.
Yeah. And here, you know, since you brought up the playoffs, I'll get on my high horse a little bit here. I don't think people are giving enough credit to what the team did in the first two rounds, especially considering Minnesota beat Dallas up.
Yeah.
And
not Dallas won the Dallas series, right?
Yeah, Dallas won that series, but they got abused, and that took a lot physically out of the team, I believe. And then you go and throw them up against this lightning quick Kraken team that is just on a pretty decent heater of their own and play an entirely different kind of game. And Dallas was able to adjust to those two different games and come out of those series with the wins. And they were in okay shape against Vegas, until I hate to harp on one thing, until that Ben game. And
well,
that game kind of took it out of them.
That, yeah. And I think, you know, the Ben game, Suter costing them game two, and yep. Jamie Benn costing them, what was it, game four, right? I think you take those out of it. Or was it game four? I have blacked out.
Wasn't it? Yeah, it's bad memories. I don't remember losing series nearly as much as I remember.
But no, I think you're completely correct. But again, I think that's the sort of, that is the risk you run in a situation where you have a flaw, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess my point is that the seeding in the playoffs will show up. I believe Dallas will be part of that, and how that bracket looks and who Dallas has to play will go a long way to say how far this team has a chance to go. Because I think if you don't take the physical toll of Minnesota and out of that team, I think they have a lot more going into the Vegas series.
Yeah,
and you know, who knows? Vegas, like any other hockey team, has fatal flaws.
Yes, and especially in the cap era.
Yeah, and so how Vegas ends up getting paired up, and here assuming that Dallas isn't playing Vegas in the first round, this is something that, you know, Vegas has to get through it too.
Well, and in Dallas this season, right? Dallas has Matt Duchene, which so far, right, two full thumbs up, and Mason Marchment is back to being an effective offensive player versus, you know, the guy that he was. And yeah, I mean, you're right. I'm not saying the sky is falling and they're doomed. I think, you know, if they get lucky health wise, if Jake Oettinger plays at a perfectly, you know, historically established level, that there's a world in which this team, we saw it in the first couple months, this team is good enough to win it. Right. Yeah. I am not backing down off of that opinion. This team is absolutely good enough to win it. And it's not just because they have a flaw doesn't mean the team they're playing is going to be, from a health, coaching, or talent perspective, able to take advantage of it. Right. But this is a team that I think if you look at them, if you're Vegas or if you're Colorado, like, this is a team you look at and say, okay, I can see our path if we run into these guys.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean you're going to walk the truth, right? There's a tiger on that path, you know?
Yeah. Four months from now, we could very, very easily be talking about the LA Kings.
Yeah.
And that's an entirely different beast. And if we focus too much on how we're going to get by Vegas, and so much of what happens with Vegas has to do with what Adin Hill's been able to do to the Stars over the last 9 months.
Yeah, right.
And you take him out of, if you take him and his standing on his head, whether it's playoffs or regular season, and just have him go head to head with the Skaters, that's a 50-50 match. But my dark horse is the Kings, and I don't think anybody in Dallas has been paying a whole lot of attention to what's going on with LA, but they could very easily come out of the Pacific as the number one team.
Yeah, they're a good team, and especially like the other X factor, I think, and we're getting really into weird scenarios, is if the Oilers are, the Oilers are going to make it, we could wind up in a situation where there is a very dangerous 8 seed. Right. Yeah. It reminds me of the Kings the first year they won it, when they made a couple of deals, buoyed up the roster. And, because if the Oilers are going to make it, like we all think they might, it's going to be because they go on an absolute blister. Right. So it could be a situation where somebody has a great season at the top of the conference, and then they get, McDavid and Dreisaitl sneaking in as a scorching hot number 8 seed. And that's not exactly a 1-8 matchup in the same way that it's been in years past.
Yep.
But all of this is to say, you ask me where I stand. I'm nowhere close. I've got the panic button. It exists, right? I've got it on the old desk, but I've still got the little glass case on top of it, and I've still got the key lock. And, I have to get my wife to come into the room. We both have to simultaneously turn our keys to get access to the panic button. Like, it's safely stowed away, right? Nothing that I'm worried about. And again, ask me in a month, but I'm not worried about, oh gosh, they're gonna fall, they're gonna fall out of contention. They're gonna come apart. I'm not worried about any of that stuff, because everybody's playing fine. Everybody's playing fine. Plenty of guys could play much better. And if even one or two guys, goes on a run that they've been on before, I'm looking at, Jamie Benn, Rupe Hintz, we talked about Robo earlier, Ottinger, Wyatt Johnston right now looks like he's capable of putting the team on his back. Duchesne, the Sagan line has been dynamite, I think. So there's a lot of stuff that could happen that makes games like the Colorado and the Calgary games, they also put they beat the Rangers. They put the wood to the Minnesota Wild. So like there's a world in which everything is great, not just fine. So I'm not worried at all, but to your point, I do think that there are some things that this team needs to start aggressively looking at in terms of the defense, just to make sure that they are well-positioned for a productive offseason, or postseason, rather.
Yeah, and the thing is, it may just be one of these temporary shakeups. That's certainly what DeBoer did with the offense, and so maybe it's time to try that with the defense a little bit.
But yeah, I mean,
otherwise, I mean, as Dallas Stars fans, you're feeling pretty good about this year. If you have any kind of historic memory, you know that this is a team that was always a conversation about whether they were going to be on which side of the bubble and making the playoffs or not making the playoffs. And that's not really the conversation that we're having right now, and it shouldn't be.
I mean, I don't want to alarm you, but in 1999... on December 23rd, Dallas lost 5-2 against the Chicago Blackhawks. Right? They got lit up, man. They lost 5-2 again on February 21st, 2000, and that season turned out okay. Right? They lost 23 times that year, and everything turned. They lost to the Sharks. They lost to some tough. They lost to the Islanders in overtime. They tied the Canucks. Like, there are some blemishes, my dude, on what turned out to be a pretty okay season.
Well, and I'll leave with one final thought. It's somebody we haven't talked about yet who I think deserves a lot of praise. And Scott Wedgwood has been awesome. And I'll just leave it at that. He's been everything that this team has wanted from a backup goaltender.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, again, we are looking at another year of home runs from management. Wedgwood has been exactly what this team needed him to be. Duchesne has been exactly what his team needed to be. It seems like the Duchesne deal and a little bit of patience has put Marchment in a much better position. Bringing Dadonoff back looks like it was a good idea. You know, Wyatt Johnston, like, it's right now, it's looking good.
Okay, so let's go celebrate some victories.
It's time for this team. You know, they rebounded very well to the Colorado loss. It's time for them to rebound in a way that lasts more than a single result. So let's see it, boys. Is I think that the good concluding thought here.
I agree. And sometimes it just helps to get out on the road. That's really
good. Well, then thank you, as always, Mark, for the insights.
Yep, that was good.
For talking me off the ledge, KT, for stitching it all together. Don't forget to download and like and do all of the things that make us know that you love us, and we certainly love you.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Wherever the road may take you, Discount Tire and Continental Tire get you there safely with the perfect combination of style, comfort, and price. Get a set of Continental tires at your local Discount Tire store or online at discounttire.com. Discount Tire, let's get you taken care of.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.